Hello everyone and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen and with me are
Devendra Hardwar
and Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. On today's episode, we're going to switch up the format even more today. Today is generally when we would do our movie review followed by an After Dark. But we have been getting some feedback that, hey, they love the After Dark. People love the After Dark. They love kind of freewheeling discussion. But they don't like that we put it after the spoiler section of a movie they might not have seen.
Right.
So we are going to change it to a Before Dark. And have that free
because
discussion.
You demanded it.
Because, yeah.
because you demanded it.
It's the happy hour instead of after dark.
That's right. There you go.
So this is now a before dark, a happy hour, where we're going to talk about a variety of random topics before the review. And
but probably neither happy nor an hour long.
And hopefully people will enjoy that. But yeah, so that's what is on store for today. And the review today is going to be Lee Whannell's new movie, The Invisible Man. Now, I know we had said last week we're going to review Onward. But for reasons that we'll get into, one of which is that people requested it, we're going to do The Invisible
Man. Because you demanded it.
Jeff, also, one Jeff, movie sounded a lot more interesting. Yeah.
So basically people demanded it. But also, again, for reasons I'll get into, it was a little bit challenging for me to go to a movie theater this weekend to go see Onward.
Because the government demanded it.
All right. So, yeah, that's what's in store. You can find more episodes at slashfilmcast.com. You can also email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Now, in terms of the Before Dark, the happy hour, whatever you want to call it, I do want to acknowledge that we have gotten a lot of feedback about the new format. And I wanted to thank everyone who wrote into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. I forwarded most of those emails to you guys. I think you guys have a pretty good sense of like where people come down on it. Uh-huh. And I just want to say thank you to all the emailers. I would say 90% of the emails were extremely kind and understanding. It was not just like, hey, love the new format. It was, hey, I understand, you know, that you guys are really busy, that your lives are crazy right now, and I support anything that is necessary to keep the Slash Filmcast going. That is basically what 90% of the emails were. And yeah. I just thought that was very kind. Like, people are very understanding and nice and sympathetic. And so I appreciate all of you. And I also appreciate 7% of the remaining 10% where people were like, hey, I respectfully disagree with the new format. You know, like it's they were a fan of the old ways and they explained very logically why. And so appreciate that as well. And then 3% of the emails were like, make it back the old way. The new way sucks, you know, without any kind of sympathy or understanding at all. And was less a fan of those. But there were a tiny, tiny minority of all the emails. Just wanted to acknowledge that, like, yeah, we're still trying things out. We're trying to see if this new way is a better way for our lives and a better way for us to do the show and see what people appreciate. So, of course, you can always keep the emails coming into slashfilmcast@gmail.com or tweet at us. We're all on Twitter, and we generally see your stuff. So,
but basically what we learned is that some people liked it, some people didn't, and it's hard to determine a consensus. It's just we're going to probably do what is best for us.
Yes. I think that's probably accurate. So one of the benefits of the new format, though, I do want to call out is that because we are now basically recording episodes two at a time, we have the ability now to take more time to put into the production of each episode. And one of the side benefits of that is basically, like, for the last 12 years of the Slash Filmcast, the way the show has been produced is I have recorded the conversation on Skype, and then we've just edited the conversation on Skype and published that as an audio file and put that on the podcast feed.
All right.
And that has worked for us pretty well for 12 years, but it comes with some downsides. Number one is, if Skype is bad, then the audio sounds bad. But number two is, like, Skype generally already compresses the audio. Like, when you're talking, it's not giving you lossless audio through Skype, right? So We are always using some compressed audio. Well, compressed audio for you guys. My stuff is uncompressed. My shit.
Which is
why we stuck with it. Yeah.
Dave has not seen a problem with this current stuff like, up until now.
I sound great. Other people talk, and then I sound great again.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Dave Chen Wei.
So there were a lot of advantages of that. Like, number one, I was able to put out an episode literally, like, could get it out to like tens of thousands of people literally 30 minutes after we finished recording. You know, just boom, boom, bam, boom, like it's out into the world 30 minutes after we're done. You know, that worked for us really well. But because we have a little extra time, we are experimenting with doing a thing where we now record each of our audio separately and then combine them all into one audio feed. And we got
it turns out that in the intervening 12 years, other people have started doing podcasts and figured out pretty good ways to do things.
That's shocking, Jeff. That's shocking. So that's what we did for the last couple episodes. And we got a ton of feedback that it was a lot better sounding. Right. So that's kind of a trade off that we're kind of making here, is like we're taking a little extra time on the episodes. We're spacing out our recordings a little bit, but as a result, we can get a little better sounding audio. And I think I love one listener compared it to like hearing you guys in 4K for the first time rather than just HD. I thought that was a great analogy. So
it's more like the bump from SD straight to 4K. That's what it sounds like to me. But yeah,
fair enough. So all that said, sometimes if our audio goes badly, I still am recording a backup of the Skype, and so on occasion we might use the Skype recording. But you know, we're going to try to up the audio quality on the episodes a little bit. On that note, I've also acquired a new microphone. I'm trying today the Audio Technica R2100X USB microphone, trying that out. I usually use the Rode Podcaster, but giving this a shot as well to see if it makes a difference as well. So we're trying all kinds of things, is what I'm trying to say. And appreciate all people's feedback on it. But yeah, anyway, that's what's happening with the show right now. I wanted to give people a little update. All right, second topic on our Before Dark, before we get to our review of The Invisible Man, is boy, gents, a lot has happened since the last episode that we recorded.
What are you talking about?
Which was a couple weeks ago. I'll tell you one thing that happened. I was supposed to go to South by Southwest for the first time. I was really excited. I actually was invited to do a panel on South by Southwest this year and was super psyched. Like, not only am I going, I'm doing a panel. I'm so excited because last year South by Southwest sounded so awesome.
Yeah.
And my wife and I actually won tickets to South by Southwest at a gala to benefit a local nonprofit. So we had bid on these tickets and we'd won the tickets and we're like super psyched to go. And then a massive outbreak of coronavirus occurred within 15 miles of where I'm sitting right now. I think to this moment, as we're recording this, I believe Seattle still has the most deaths in the U.S. from coronavirus. So like it's the most acutely felt near where I live. And I'll get into that, what that feels like in a little bit. But
I believe New York has you beat on total cases at this point.
So yeah, South by Southwest was canceled. And a few, like, I think we are just beginning to feel the reverberations through the film industry of what is going to happen as a result of the coronavirus. The other big thing is that the release date of the new James Bond film, No Time to Die, was pushed from April to November of 2020.
Because no one wants to go to the movie theater.
No one wants to. It is, of all the places you want to be in an enclosed space with
watching a movie called No Time to Die.
Watching a movie called No Time to Die with 400 coughing people is probably not on the top of your list at this point in time.
The new James Bond thriller, Please Don't Cough on Me.
Indeed. So this is going to be something that I think, like, you know, obviously, it is a massive public health crisis, and nothing we discuss here should be taken to minimize that at all. This is something people should stay informed about. And I mean, everyone needs to make the decisions that they like, make the set of trade-offs that they feel is right for them. I actually have felt some judgment this week from some of the trade-offs I've been making. And I would just encourage people to be understanding. Like, you don't know what situation people are in. Maybe they live with their parents. Maybe they take care of their parents. Maybe they have people in their lives that are immunocompromised. Like, you have no idea why people are making the decisions they're making. So I would urge understanding, but I'd also urge people to stay informed as much as you can.
One of the things I read this week, Dave, was, you know, you shouldn't be as scared of getting COVID-19. You should be scared of giving it.
That's true. And if you are an at-risk population, like if you're over 60, then yeah, you should be scared of getting it, you know? So
20% death rate over 60.
Yeah.
So 20%. For comparison's sake, the Spanish flu had a 3% death rate.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, breaking it down to over 60, the actual, you know, full virus only has about a little bit over 3% death rate, but it's scary. It's scary for people like me who interact with my in-laws who are over 60 on a regular basis because they provide childcare for us. And you're right, Dave. You know, there's a lot of people, I think, that shrug it off and say, oh, it's being all blown out of proportion. Oh, the flu kills more people. We could be next week at this time. We could be as changed as we are from last week at this time. You know what I mean?
Things are progressing pretty quickly. Yeah.
And we may not have a summer. There may not be a summer as we usually know it in the movie industry, in any industry. I mean, I can imagine there being no Comic-Con. I can imagine there being no Gen Con, no E3, all of these things that are geek staples of the summer convention season. I can imagine all of those going away and then the economy going crazy. You know, it's a serious business.
Stay safe, people. Yeah.
The consequences are going to be from an economic standpoint, like, we won't know for months, if not years, like what the consequences are. But I read today that South by Southwest, right? Like it is going to be very difficult for them to recover from this because they've never canceled over the course of decades. South by Southwest, a festival that brings over $350 million of economic activity to the Austin area. And their contracts, their insurance did not stipulate for in the event of a pandemic, we will be covered because no one foresaw that would occur. So lots of different people are on the hook for a lot of different things that they might not be able to afford. Meanwhile, I'll just say in Seattle, where one of the biggest outbreaks occurring right now. I'm just going to say it's weird right now. I'm not going to say, like, I've read reports, oh, Seattle's a ghost town. There are moments when you go outside and it is extremely eerie, right? Like, things that are usually extremely busy, traffic that's usually really bad, is not anymore. Companies like Amazon, my employer, Microsoft, other offices in Seattle, like Facebook and Google, they've all said work from home if you can through the end of March, right? So that's tens of thousands of people working from home right now. But then sometimes you go outside, you go to a restaurant, it's packed, you know? So it's just really weird. It's like this in-between phase of everyone's quarantining versus like no one's quarantining. It's this weird in-between period in Seattle right now.
In New York, like I haven't really noticed too much else happening. Like the subway is still packed when it needs to be. Some companies are asking people to work from home. I've noticed that if somebody just coughs on the subway or anywhere, you know, people will step back. Like there is a more pronounced distancing happening, which, you know, it's I feel like everybody needs to do what they need to do to stay safe and keep safe. That's something we should all be doing during the flu season anyway. I'm not glad to see that, this has gone kind of racist almost immediately, but that's the way it goes with humanity.
Yeah, it went racist pretty much instantly. The like restaurants in Chinatown in Seattle have taken a huge hit in attendance. There's been reports of anti-Asian racism all around the world. Actually, I made a YouTube video about it this last week that was picked up by the online news service Now This. If you want to check that out, but basically I go into some of the events that have been occurring where people will treat you differently or say rude things to you because you're Asian and they think you're carrying the coronavirus. In fact, as far as we know, the coronavirus has no racial preferences, although it did start in China, but like it's in Italy, it's in Iran, it's, you know, all over the world. It doesn't discriminate based on race. So it is a shame that there's been this kind of xenophobic activation as a result of this xenophobic contagion as well as a result of the coronavirus. But I think Jeff, has it affected life in LA at this point? Like, what's your situation like right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody is aware of it and conscious of it, and you find people out less, and restaurants are emptier. It's on everyone's tongue. You know, it's a bad, shouldn't say that. It's everybody's talking about it. And yeah, I think there's a pall over everything.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, as here we are on a movie podcast, it's hard for me not to think of it in movie terms. And I think that's weird, maybe, but that's how my brain works, kind of.
Well, you mean in general, like, because you like live in LA and because you are co-host on a movie podcast and because you're an actor? Like, is that why or?
No, because it feels like whenever something like this happens, you feel like, well, are we in act one of the movie?
Yeah.
Right now? I mean, is this one of the
flashbacks to the before times, basically.
Is this the part where everybody's like, oh, you know, it's silly to be so worried, and then cut to, you know, hysteria in the streets and people smashing windows and stuff. So, you know, you never know. I have a hard time zeroing in on the correct level of panic.
I have noticed,
you know,
like,
appropriate level.
If you guys go to the drugstore or something, like, yeah, the toilet paper, hand sanitizer, certainly, like, those essentials are quickly disappearing. So
yeah,
I stocked up on diapers. That's the main thing.
In the nearest pharmacies to me, all hand sanitizer is gone. All the thermometers are gone. All the latex or medical gloves are gone. Mm-hmm. It's all gone. And yeah, toilet paper, people are definitely making a run on it as well. But yeah, I think basically, you know, I just would encourage.
Toilet paper seems like a weird thing to be concerned about.
So, you know, Jeff, when you don't have toilet paper, things go downhill pretty quickly.
Here's the response.
What's the worst version? What's the worst version of not having toilet paper? Literally, you use a wash rag that you then wash.
So Jeff, I think I've seen a lot of like mockery of people who are hoarding toilet paper online, and you know, I would just really obviously like spread correct information, but I think like one of the arguments for hoarding toilet paper and other essentials is anticipating an era in which going outside will not be encouraged.
I understand that. Right? My point is, what's the worst version of not having toilet
paper? Oh, Jeff, I take it. Have you ever had to like? You know, when you go camping and you got to wipe outside and you don't even have like a leaf or something around, like,
yeah, but you're not going to be outside with a leaf. You're going to be in your house. You're going to be stuck.
We're all anticipating the potential downfall of civilization right now. So I feel like the thing we're clinging on to is that lovely double ply and our clean bums. That's all we've got.
I think that's all we
can control, Jeff. Okay.
Fair enough. I think it's worth noting that there are systems in place for water and electricity not to go away in this particular kind of crisis. Mm. I don't understand.
It's a really strong argument for
the
bidet market, I think, is what's
happening. Yeah, bidet market, pretty strong. But like diapers and wipes and stuff, like those are things. Life would be pretty hard if I don't have a steady supply of diapers and I don't do the nappy thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, believe me, we bought extra diapers as well. But I have friends who use, you know, cloth diapers. It's not
yeah,
the end of the world.
Your point is taken. But I think I just am saying, like, overall, I hope people are staying safe out there and reading up on what is happening and making informed decisions about whether to go outside, what to hoard. I think, like, everyone just needs to make their own decisions and try to not judge other people's decisions insofar as it's possible.
You know, like, in a post-apocalyptic movie, when one character says, you know, the one thing you never thought you'd miss during civilization, it's toilet paper. Flash 2.
That's what I mean. I keep thinking about, is this the first act where I'm sort of blithely thinking, like, oh, man, we're going to be laughing about this in 2 months, and then we're all in the quiet place. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that, you know, honestly, if we're looking at this through the lens of movies, like the Steven Soderbergh movie Contagion, which, by the way, excellent movie.
And horrifying on every level.
It's having a huge resurgence right now. Like, it is become one of the top sellers on VOD. People have pirated it through the roof because it's not available on any streaming service right now. I just read this thing on The Verge about how, like, Torrent Freak has been tracking contagion downloads, and it's like really, really high because people want to see this movie.
Yeah,
And that's
how we process trauma. The contagion is spreading. Is that what you're saying?
And I think that that movie actually offers like a pretty good picture of how a lot of these social dynamics play out. Now, the virus in that movie was way worse than COVID.
There's that wonderful sequence though, where it just shows how it spreads to the doorknob, to the sneeze, to the airplane.
That's the thing. The method of transmission was very similar in that. But the downside of contagion is that is an absolute best case scenario of how society would handle it. You know, like, and it was still not very good, right? Like we did it.
Yeah,
okay
that movie
job.
Assumes competent leaders, non stripped down government services, a entire administration that isn't in denial.
It's really scary to not have someone at the wheel on this. It's frightening that we don't have leadership in this country that is. I've read online that many people right now they think that it's a hoax, or they think that it's concocted by the Democrats to take down Donald Trump. And I'm not going to say that the media never sensationalizes things, because that's basically a lot of what they do. But I do think that there are limits to how much you can spin science. You know, there are limits to how much you can spin a pandemic phenomenon like this. And so
you're so naive. There's no limits to how much you can spin science.
I think what I'm saying is, maybe I'm not stating myself correctly. I think what I'm saying is like, you can spin it, but like in the end, you know, people are still going to get it, even if you say they're not getting it. Right. And so like, what's going to happen as a result of that? We don't know yet. We don't know yet. But anyway, again, stay safe. And I think that like the consequences for the, one last thing, by the way, when I say like, don't judge other people's decisions, like I do think there are things people can say or do that will help to provide information. Like, there was like a thing of like, you know, don't hoard masks, because like masks don't help you stop getting it, and you're taking them away from public health people and stuff like that. Like, I can kind of understand, although even that, like, it, theoretically, if you have it, wearing a mask actually does help. So like, it, everything has like edge cases. And so just like, I would encourage people to be understanding. But also, yeah, there are some benefits to actually spreading information. That all that said, the impact on the entertainment industry is going to be pretty intense, I think. Like, we don't even know if some of these big movies of the summer are going to happen, right?
The movies you're talking about, movies that are in the can and they're worried about whether or not people can get out to see them.
Yeah.
There's a real possibility that Hollywood just shuts down, and
they already shut down filming of Mission Impossible, the sequel.
Right. And I mean, there's a real, very, very plausible scenario where all of the industry just stops, and we have sort of a writer's strike on steroids issue, where there was, you know, this period a few years ago where the writer's strike happened, and everything out of Hollywood for this window of time was different, delayed, or they had, you know, strange different writers, and there's a quality hit and everything. That we could have just this real weird window where there just isn't any new entertainment made. And that's really kind of a strange thing to contemplate as well.
Yeah. And we don't know what, in terms of the impact to this show, we don't know what the summer movie wager is going to be this year. We don't know even if we'll have one, because
the real dire consequences. What about the summer movie wager, you guys?
I know that's the number one coronavirus issue on everyone's mind. But yeah, I don't even know if we're going to have one this year, because I don't think at the time we would typically record it, we are going to know what the summer slate is going to look like. You know what I mean? Like, like theoretically, we'd record that in like what, April timeframe, right? Yeah. Early April. And I don't know if we'll know by then what movies are actually going to be coming out this summer. So
it's going to be the bummer movie wager. Am I right?
Wow.
Am I right, you guys?
It's awful.
I'm right, right?
The other thing is, I don't know if I should actually be going to see movies right now, like physically going to the theater to see movies right now, because being in a enclosed space with hundreds of people transmitting something that can be transmitted using like droplets left on surfaces. It's not a good, and also like experts understand that there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of undetected cases in Seattle. They don't know how it's how long people are contagious for. Like, you can have it but not have any symptoms. You know, like, there's all these things that people just don't know yet, and hopefully we will know soon. But the bottom line is, like, you might see episodes in the future where I have not seen the movie, and I'll just be kind of moderating the conversation. But we'll see. We just don't know anything, and we'll probably know
we'll do a slew of streaming hits or something, or video on demand choices.
It may change the format even more than it already has. So, okay.
Yeah.
So hope everyone's
we'll just be doing reviews of toilet paper alternatives. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I'm a fan of Charmin myself, but I know people prefer Cottonelle as well.
I'm saying alternatives, my friend. Alternatives.
I see. Oh, I see. I see. Okay. All right. All right. So that's how coronavirus is impacting the industry and us. Hope everyone's staying safe out there. All right. I wanted to read one email before we get to our review. This one comes in from Brian from Fairfield, Connecticut. But actually, you know what? Before we get to this email, why don't we thank our first sponsor for the day? Jeff, you want to tell us about our first sponsor?
Yes. This is a sponsor that has had a very positive impact on my life and my feeling of being clean and healthy. And it's Quip. Quip is my toothbrush. My toothbrush. In fact, it is three of my family members' toothbrush at the moment. We are a three Quip family. Everybody who brushes their teeth in my house. Actually, we brush my daughter's teeth, but she hasn't graduated to Quip yet. But they do have a cool kids size version that my son uses that has a smaller brush head. But I'll tell you why we love Quip, and it is because it basically handles all of the best aspects of dental hygiene for me. I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about the time it takes to brush. I probably never brushed a full 2 minutes, which is dentist recommended, before I had Quips. But now I do every time. Why? Because Quip turns on for 2 minutes and then it turns itself off. And every 30 seconds, it vibrates and pulses and tells me that I've been going for 30 seconds, so I can sort of switch areas of my mouth. I break my mouth into quadrants now. It's pretty cool. But I can take my mind off of it and let the toothbrush keep track of that for me. Plus, the bristles are soft and gentle. They're really great for even if you have sensitive gums. And I'm subscribed to Quip, so I get new toothpaste every 3 months. I get a new brush head every 3 months, which is what dentists recommend as well. I probably never changed out my toothbrush every 3 months before that. I would have these wimpy little squished bristles. I bet, listener, if you went and looked in your bathroom right now and looked at your toothbrush, I bet you have a past due toothbrush. I bet your bristles are all squished and bent and really not doing the job. Quip will handle all that for you. You got a new brush head that comes every 3 months when you're subscribed. It's great. I really, really genuinely love my Quip. It stays off my counter. It has a cool little case that it sits in. It's just great. And if you go to getquip.com/filmcast right now, you can get your first refill for free. That's right, just for listening to the show. Your first refill free at getquip.com/filmcast. That's spelled GETQUIP.com/filmcast. FILMCAST, all one word, Quip, the Good Habits Company.
All right. On the last episode of the Slash Filmcast After Dark, we had a conversation about why Blu-rays suck. And Jeff ruthlessly mocked me for even bringing up the subject.
Yeah.
But we did get this email from Brian, and I had to read this email because I know that Devendra, at least Devendra, you and I are going to geek out about this.
Sure.
This email comes from Brian. He writes in to slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Loved the After Dark bit about Blu-rays. Like Devendra, I have a stack of HD DVDs, and when HD DVD failed, I bought a bunch of Blu-rays. And since day one, I have always hated the Blu-rays for all the reasons played out by the Angry Video Game Nerd video that you mentioned. The inability to come back and restart a movie where I left off later that day or later that hour sends me over the brink. And that was one thing I didn't mention. Like, how often have you guys used a Blu-ray? I guess you guys don't use Blu-rays at all, but like, how often do you use a Blu-ray and then like the resume feature does not work? You know?
All the time.
You'll watch it and then you stop it and then you resume it and it does not resume. It's like, wow. We're basically taking a step back from VHS, right?
In the sense of monster doesn't watch a movie all in one sitting?
A monster with kids, Jeff? Come on. You should be understanding here.
I don't even turn it on.
I watch movies in over 3 days now. Yeah.
Okay. Back to the email. Here's the rub. Even though I know how much I hate Blu-rays, the hosts of my favorite podcast all got the Mission Impossible 4K Blu-ray set before the release of Fallout. These guys raved about the picture, and so I just had to have this new tech. I bought an 85-inch 4K TV, the 4K Blu-ray player, and a bunch of 4K Blu-rays. Mad Max Fury Road, Blade Runner, Blade Runner 2049, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, The Matrix, Annihilation, and Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
The way to live, people.
Theaters in 60 FPS, 3D, the way the director intended.
Yes.
Pause for a moment. I love how in this email, Brian sounds like he bought all those things because he listened to this podcast.
Yeah, like you can't put that on us, man. You can't put that on us.
I did talk about Billy Lynn, and I have talked about that Blu-ray, so, you know.
Yeah. You are responsible for Brian's $10,000 of expenditures.
Yes.
Okay. And back to the email. I am a sucker. 4K Blu-rays suck even worse than regular Blu-rays. And honestly, the worst part is the picture. I should have known this because I don't like 4K streaming either. In addition to the 85-inch TV, I have a 12-foot wide screen with a projector, and I sit pretty close to both. In general, these are excellent viewing experiences, but the downside of sitting close to 4K content is bad skin, sharp edges, and a picture that just looks terrible no matter how much futzing I do with the settings. Sharper and more details is not always better. In my opinion, 4K should be an acquisition format, but not a display format unless watching in a theater.
So this goes too far. This goes way too far. But I will say this is the lovely Twilight Zone ending to his cinephilia. You know,
like, I was supposed to have time enough at last to enjoy my Blu-rays.
This is the stepping on the eyeglasses of the end. But I think his real issue is with human beings. He's like, their skin is bad. You know, it's like, that's how people look.
Okay, so back to the email. So now I'm stuck with about 2,000 DVDs, which are easy to use but look terrible. I'm just laughing because it's really feeding into this Twilight Zone thing you guys are saying. 75 HD DVDs, hundreds of Blu-rays, and 7 4K discs. Why do I keep buying them, you ask? I love the commentary tracks, and in general, you can only get them on the Blu-ray. My absurd strategy, by the way, it gets better, okay? My absurd strategy is to rip any disc I get, including all the commentary tracks, the moment it shows up on the front porch. That means most of my physical Blu-rays have never even been watched once, but that I now have the movies, a movies catalog of roughly 2,600 films that I watch on my Apple TV.
Crazy person. That's what it is.
I love the convenience of this movie library. It's like my own personal Netflix or Prime, but it's been a lot of work to get there. Sometimes I ask myself, is the time it has taken to rip, convert, meta tag, and back up all these films more than the time it would have taken me to reset the menu or start over on a disc? I think we all know the answer.
It's an unanswerable question, man.
Who knows?
P/filmcast. That email comes from Brian from Fairfield, Connecticut.
I love this letter, by the way, because this listener just speaks right to my heart.
Yes.
I wrote in 2016 that 4K Blu-ray, it's a dead format, right? This is probably the last physical format we'll ever see. That's also why I can't stop buying them, because for me, the quality is up there. It's near what we're getting, you know, in theaters. But what were you going to say, Dave?
Well, I was just going to say, I agree. This speaks directly to my heart as well. I mean, all the agony that this person experiences over his physical media choices, I have experienced the same, if not tenfold. And I think that here's the thing about people who like rip things and put them on their Plex server and stuff. Like, I admire those people, but I could never be one of them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh man, I wish I was someone like you. You know what I mean? But I can't be you. Because for me, taking out a Blu-ray out of its case and putting it into the disc player is already like a huge accomplishment over just like, you know, whispering into my Amazon TV or my Siri, like, hey, bring up Contagion, you know, and then it's there and I can stream it instantly. Yeah. Like,
this is why convenience will always win in any technology battle. Like that's just the thing. Good thing about some streaming movies now, we are getting the commentary. So like that's why I only buy digitally on iTunes, because they tend to get those.
Yeah.
That is the market Apple's locked up.
But my point being, sorry, go ahead, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, go ahead. Your point being.
Well, yeah, so just like that, that is like literally taking out the disc off my shelf. You got to open the case. You got to walk to the player, you know, like walk back from the player to the couch. Like all that stuff is when I do that, I feel like a champ. I feel like I've just done the movie, the film Twitter version of a decathlon, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so the idea that I'm going to like rip everything, metadata tag it, back it up, like I'm just like, no, it's not even... I can't imagine a world where that could occur, you know?
Dave, what you're missing about all of this is that this is, as you guys, I think you guys sort of intuit that this is the ultimate nerd email. That's why I think all of us feel such a love of this
kinship.
Email.
Kinship.
It speaks to our hearts.
Yeah.
Like this isn't your particular flavor of nerddom and nor is it mine, but what we're failing to see here, what we're failing to express here is that, and I don't even think Brian knows it. Like he doesn't know it consciously, but the joy he's getting has nothing to do with anything we've talked about. Like, for example, for me, I am obsessed with designer board games, like German weird designer board games. I research them online. I purchase them, I get the box, I take the shrink wrap off, I open them up, I meticulously punch out all of the components, I put them in their own individual baggies, I think long and hard about the best composition of the box, the organization, how it's going to be best, most easy for each player to get the components that they want, how those should be bagged. I look online for specialty shops that do custom inserts for the box to make sure the box is most perfectly organized to have you can put together these things. I order those things. They arrive. I have to glue them and snap them together to create the most perfect box insert. I then put the box insert in the box, put all my baggies specifically into each of those boxes, make sure all the coins fit specifically. Sometimes I'll buy the specialty upgrade components so the cooler components are there in the box. And then I'll play the game twice.
The aristocrats. Yeah.
And what I've learned is my joy, I think my joy is playing of the game. And I do like playing the games. Mm-hmm. But my joy is all that other mishigas.
It's the collection.
And I think that's what Brian doesn't even know it himself. Like, consciously, he doesn't even know it.
Well, maybe he does know it. He just didn't write it in the email. But yes.
You get a sense that he's like, why do I do this, man? It's like...
Does he like the way 4K looks anymore? Yeah.
Yeah. The organization is the thing. He's saying, like, I have a 12-foot wide screen, and I listen to the audio tracks. You know what I'm saying? That's what he's saying to us.
Yeah.
He's listened to a friggin' podcast for each Blu-ray that he gets. It's the organization. It's the putting everything in its right spot. It's making the best choice to have the perfect thing. That's the joy that Brian is getting. And I say more power to you, Brian. You do you. You know what I'm saying? That's the nerd way. That used to be the nerd way. The nerd way, when I was a kid, when nerd was nerd, that's what it was about, man. It was about like going down the rabbit hole of weird shit. And now nerd means like arguing with people online. I'm a nerd because I like DC over Marvel or wherever the fuck. I'm a nerd because I've seen all the Star Wars movies 8 times. No, that's dumb. Everybody's seen the Star Wars movies 8 times. Who cares? It's this stuff. It's this shit makes you a nerd. This is nerd stuff. It's like, yeah, I spent 400 hours doing something that got me zero benefit. Zero. But I committed myself to it and I did it. That's being a nerd, man.
All right. Beautifully said, Jeff. Beautifully said.
Thank you.
Well, I think we got to get to our review. But thanks to Brian for that awesome email. We all feel you. And keep doing you, man. Keep doing you, no matter what people say. All right, let's get to our review of Lee Winnell's The Invisible Man.
Adrian. He was a sociopath. He said that I could never leave him. He controlled how I looked and what I wore. Then I was controlling when I left the house. And eventually, what I thought. Sorry, I can't take you with me. not going to leave you with that thing on. Are you okay?
That was from the trailer for The Invisible Man, the new movie by Lee Winnell starring Elizabeth Moss. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. When Cecilia's abusive ex takes his own life and leaves her his fortune, she suspects his death was a hoax. As a series of coincidences turn lethal, Cecilia works to prove that she is being hunted by somebody no one can see. All right, so this is the follow-up to Lee Winnell's movie Upgrade, which was a low-budget sci-fi movie that
kind of ruled.
It was pretty awesome, in my opinion. It was a better Venom movie than Venom, in my opinion. And although it was like the low-budget of the movie version of Venom, in every respect, including the main character, who's played by Logan Marshall Green, a poor man's Tom Hardy. Although, again, as I said, Upgrade, better film. So was really psyched to see what he would do, and certainly he like stepped into this role of reinventing this universal monster of the Invisible Man.
I will say, Dave, before you get into this, this guy is behind your favorite movie franchise of all time.
It's not my favorite movie franchise, but yes, he was an actor and a writer, I believe.
And writer, he wrote Saw. Yeah,
he is actor and writer for the original Saw.
We had Dave's favorite movie franchise of all time.
It's really not my favorite movie franchise. Just putting that out there. He also directed Insidious Chapter 3, for those who are a fan of that movie.
Nobody was a fan of that movie, but so Upgrade was a big step up.
Upgrade was a big upgrade, so to speak. This is a big, he's been kind of making these low budget movies. You know, Upgrade, I think, was, you know, a few million dollars. The Invisible Man was made for $7 million under the Blumhouse kind of model of making an extremely low budget movie and seeing if it does well on mass release.
That's extremely low budget. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that said, Devendra Hardwar,
seems impossible to me. How much did Elizabeth Moss make of that $7
million? That's the thing, is a lot of these actors, right?
Back end?
Yeah, they take back end points.
That's all back end.
It's all back end, right? They take like a tiny fee, and then they make back end. And the in return, the directors get complete creative control. And they haven't all been hits, but many of them have worked out really, really well. So
sounds like a great idea until coronavirus hits.
Yeah, I think that's true of literally anything, though, Jeff.
Yeah, that's true.
But Devendra Hardwar, did you feel that The Invisible Man was a worthy follow-up to Upgrade?
Oh, most definitely. I think this movie is a masterpiece. For me, this movie evokes the best of John Carpenter. You know, a really interesting high-concept idea played very straight, and it's a very patient movie. Like from the very opening scene of this movie, where we basically get the sense that she, you know, this character, Elizabeth Moss's character, is on the run. She has planned her escape from her abusive boyfriend, and we never get a flashback to that, to like their relationship. You don't get the really gross scene that we saw in It 2, where there was just like a straight up, domestic abuse situation right in front of us. She just plans a silent escape like she's in a freaking heist movie. And that tells you everything about her and about the guy she's trying to escape from, and done, you know, most of the way without much dialogue too. The direction throughout this movie, just the idea of how you represent an invisible person, right? The way he frames the camera and he frames certain scenes, it's amazing. Like that alone is what it takes for us to like assume like, oh, he's there. He could be there. This movie is all about Elizabeth Moss basically reacting to nothing, which is kind of fascinating too. Like it's even, to me, her performance feels even more interesting than somebody in like a comic book movie where they're reacting against like, you know, a doll or something, or like a character in prosthetics. Like here, she is just acting against blank space until that changes up. So yeah, I love the direction of this movie. I love just like every shift it takes. I think the ending is probably something we can quibble over, but I find it kind of interesting the way it goes. But yeah, I love this movie. This movie surprised the hell out of me. We'll certainly have a lot to talk about in spoilers.
Yeah, I think as you're indicating, the movie has great use of negative space in the sense that there's many times where the camera will pan over to something or point at something And there's nothing there. There's seemingly nothing there. There seems to be, it's like a blank area or an empty chair or whatever.
It's and very just, much like a horror movie shot too. Like, you're expecting the jump scare or something.
But I think it's more than just panning over to empty space. It's leaving room in a shot with something in the foreground, with something that we are supposed to look at, leaving room that is empty to assume, like, you have Elizabeth Moss's head in, you know, the bottom right corner and all this empty space in the left. And it's like, oh, there's definitely something there. And it's so such a simple, that's how you make a $7 million movie terrifying is, you know, that was no effect shot. That was just framing the camera and creating this expectation that we're looking at something.
Agreed. So, like, really fantastic use of negative space. And I think that Elizabeth Moss's performance, as you said, really sells it. She is amazing in this movie. There is a scene in this movie where she has a conversation with a doorway that is just incredible.
Yeah.
Masterclass of acting. So a lot of really smart decisions made throughout this film. Jeff, I want to hear what you have to say about the movie. But before that, why don't we thank our second sponsor for the day?
Sure. I want to thank our second sponsor, which is Lightstream. And if you have got credit card balances, well, what if you could combine all your credit card balances into one low fixed monthly payment? You can, and it's easy with Lightstream. You get a fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. So you can pay off your credit card balances and save thousands in interest. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with absolutely no fees. That's pretty great. The application is 100% online, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that when you have good credit, you deserve a low rate and great service, and that's exactly what they deliver. So just for our listeners, you can apply now to get an additional interest rate discount to save even more. And the only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/filmcast. That's lightstream.com/filmcast for an additional discount, lightstream.com/filmcast. Now, I don't keep a credit card balance on any of my credit cards. And I think that's the way you should be. I highly, highly, highly recommend that. It gives me so much peace of mind to pay off my credit card. So if you have crazy high credit cards with, you know, you can be up to like 20% APR. It's craziness. You got to do something about it. You can get a fixed rate loan from 5.95% APR with autopay. That may help you actually pay off your credit cards and get down to zero balance, which is what I would highly recommend. This is subject to credit approval, and rates include a 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/filmcast for more information.
Before we move on, I also want to thank all the people who donated to the Slash Filmcast this week. We got a donation from Steven Theus, and also an email from TJ. So TJ donated, and he wrote the following message. Quote, I felt compelled to donate after the recent Slash Filmcast After Dark, where Dave discussed his letterbox list taking off on Reddit. During this segment, Dave directly mentions my Reddit username, which is the same as my Twitter, because I'm an idiot. It was simultaneously exciting and embarrassing. On one hand, I got an unexpected shout-out from my favorite podcast. On the other, it happened in a way that potentially exposes me to people I know as a browser of r/moviescirclejerk, a subreddit I find myself unable to leave despite most of the content being absolute trash. I hope this donation reminds me to be smarter about these things. Also, shout-out to my internet friend Steven, who I'm 99% sure listens to this podcast. He has great taste in films, and he posts the best Uncut Gems memes. That comes in from TJ, who I apparently accidentally exposed to ridicule because I called him out as a member of Movie Circle Jerk. Movie Circle Jerk. Yeah. So sorry about that, TJ, but I'm glad we got to reiterate that on this episode of the podcast.
You should own your subreddits. Come on.
A big thanks to Kunal Verma and Andrew Wall for subscribing at the rate of $2 per month. If you want to support what we do here on the Slash Filmcast, you can always go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. If you want to contribute some cash to helping us to run the show, you can also go to slashfilm.com, click on the Slash Filmcast tab, use the PayPal links on the side of the page to start a subscription at the rate of a couple dollars per month. And if you, we never want you to donate if it in any way causes you any hardship whatsoever. But if you have a couple extra bucks and you want to throw it our way, that'd be great. Also, if you want to support us for no money, you can always just go to our Apple Podcast page, leave a review for us, leave a star rating. It really does help a lot. Okay. Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on The Invisible Man.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts about The Invisible Man are best summed up in the form of a limerick. I wish I could only review the first half of Invisible Dude, because it starts so strong, but something goes wrong with a villain and plot I see through.
Mm. That was nice. I like the see-through wordplay at the end there.
Right? Because he's invisible. See?
I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
I get it.
The man is invisible.
I get it.
An invisible man, so you see through things that are invisible there.
I get it. I get it. I get it.
Cool. You know, I agree with a lot of what Devendra said, except that masterpiece part. But I do like so much of how this movie starts. I will underline what he pointed out with the beginning. I thought it was such a confident way to start. The way these movies happen, the way all of these kinds of movies happen, is exactly what Devendra pointed out, which is you get the flash, but you have to establish how horrible a guy this dude is and how this woman has to get out. And this movie just confidently goes, you'll understand. You'll get it.
Yeah. We don't need you'll to see show the terror you. In her face. Yeah.
Yes. And it's so elegant like that way. And I loved that about it, that it never felt the need to go back and play out exactly. We get it. You know, it doesn't even have to be specific. In our imagination, it's way worse than anything they could say anyway. So it's great. It's beautiful. And the movie is full of really cool ideas at the beginning. It sets up this kind of a, it sets up almost this chess game. And I was so excited to see how that was going to play out, this sort of battle of figuring things out and who's smarter and what's pulling the strings and what's actually really happening here. And there is a moment that I'm sure we'll talk about in spoilers where I was genuinely shocked.
Yeah.
There's a moment where I'm just like, whoa, this movie is about to kick into high gear. I audibly gasped and I couldn't believe, whoa, here we go. And unfortunately, that's the moment where the movie took a turn for the worse, in my opinion. And I think everything after that, I felt like, oh, we're just in this movie now. This is, it just sort of, it like got onto conventional track and it was off the conventional track so boldly. And I loved that. I was like, oh, we're not doing anything conventional here. We're doing something really bold and interesting and different. And then this thing happens and the movie goes, I'm a monster movie. That's what I am. And now we're a monster movie. And I just felt so disappointed by that. There's still fun stuff in the second half. I just felt like it let me down and it never recaptured me. But I agree the filmmaking is quite good. And we talked a lot about how it composes shots to create tension. It does that magnificently. There's one in particular, sort of a fight scene sequence toward the beginning that is just beautiful. And the movie just like gets so, I find it to be so disappointing. So disappointing. That's my biggest word, is that where this ends up and how it plays out just becomes very pat, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because I thought it could have really, if it had the courage of its convictions at the beginning, it could have, I think, been something truly remarkable. But otherwise, as it stands now, it is merely good and worth watching, but not, I think, a masterpiece as Devendra described it.
I want to say I'm probably somewhere between you two in terms of The Invisible Man. I think that there are a lot of great things about it. The best thing about it is, first of all, most stories about The Invisible Man revolve around the Invisible Man as the protagonist. Right?
Yes.
It's about like that character's descent into madness. And you know, a recent example I can think of is like Hollow Man, Paul Verhoeven's Hollow Man, right? And like how when you become invisible, it essentially removes all inhibition or morality, because you can do whatever you want without any consequences, right? That's kind of what a lot of these movies are about. And the Invisible Man, the 2020 version, takes that and turns it on its head, tells it from the perspective of the victimized, which I think is just a brilliant move to start with. And then not only does it tell from the perspective of the victimized, but it makes it into a metaphor for how domestic abusers gaslight their victims, right? Because to the victim, it's like, hey, this person is terrorizing me and please help me stop them. But like, if you're an outsider, that person can sound like a crazy person. That person can sound like they're unhinged, and an abuser can use that to further enhance his ability to control the situation. And I love how this movie does a great job of, you know, taking the concept of this universal monster, the Invisible Man, and like making it into a commentary on our age. On that note, we should say that the movie is like really upsetting, in my opinion. Like, you're watching Elizabeth Moss be terrorized for a significant portion of the movie. I could totally understand why some people might find this movie to be triggering if they've been through like a very bad relationship or something along those lines. But I think as a metaphor and as a piece of horror, thriller, entertainment, it really works and has something to say too about the state of our society. And I think that's all we can expect from a movie of this scope. So I really, really loved it. That said, I kind of agree with Jeff in the sense that I thought the ending was pretty rough. Didn't like the ending. And we can talk about that in spoilers, but yeah, was not a fan of some of those final act things that occur. And I'll leave it at that. But yeah, I think that's about it. Anything else we want to mention before we head into spoilers?
I will say it's very nice to see some of the upgrade camera angles and camera movements come back after certain points. Like, it's a nice little treat, because the way he specifically, like, when people get slammed to the floor, the camera like goes in line with it. It looks cool. That's all. It looks very cool. And there's a sequence in the middle of the movie that's basically like an extended Invisible Man's fight sequence, or, you know, I don't know, takedown sequence. And it is shot, I don't think it's one take, but it's definitely done in a way that feels very seamless and interesting. I got a lot of like Terminator 2 vibes from this movie, of her being in the Institute and nobody believing her and her escaping from it. Like, there's so much Sarah Connor in here. I honestly just started imagining Elizabeth Moss as Sarah Connor now. Unfortunately, we won't get that, but that would have been fun.
So what Devendra is referring to is in the movie Upgrade, and also in this movie, in many of the action scenes, Lee Whannell does this thing where, hard to describe, but basically the camera is like fixed on a specific perspective of a person's like body, right? Like, it's fixed to their chest or their head. And then when that person's like head gets slammed into a wall, like the camera kind of is slammed into the wall with them. And it's very kind of immersive. It's a very like stylistic move. It's very of its time. I don't know that it'll age that well, but it is super immersive, and you really feel every one of those hits when it happens. It's cool that he kind of used some of his greatest hits from Upgrade in this movie as well. Agreed. All right, let's get to spoilers for The Invisible Man, starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
Can I see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it, because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
So, Jeff Cannata, got to hear, what are you talking about when you talk
I'm
about
I'm pretty
that
sure
moment?
We all know. We all know that scene.
What's the scene, Jeff? What's the scene?
Yeah. Well, it's an extraordinary scene. You know, going to dinner with her sister, thinking, hey, this is the smartest thing she can do. We'll be in a public place. Nothing can happen to me in this very public place. That's what a smart person would do. And then, you know, of course, the worst possible thing happens. And I don't know why you don't just throw that knife down, but somehow Elizabeth Moss.
It's the shock of that moment.
I mean, somehow she, like, her acting just, I was like, okay, I'm in it. I'll buy it. The fact that she's going to hold on to it, and she's realizing what just got framed. And but
I don't think it matters, Jeff. Like, it doesn't matter if she's holding,
I know, it doesn't matter, because there's nobody else there. But if it's me, I start going, call 911, please. I at least have some plausible, like, I didn't want her to die. You know what I'm saying?
No one's going to buy that, in my opinion.
She did that calculus, and she was just like, I love that look because it's like, oh, I'm fucked.
Yeah,
basically,
it's just I love like the basically. I think it like all the sound goes away and it goes into slow motion in that moment, and she just realizes the horrible situation she's found herself in. So the reality of how that played out did not bother me in the slightest. But
I'm not complaining about that scene. I thought that scene was amazing. I just felt like, you know, I just kept rolling in my head like, what would I do in that situation? I'm throwing that knife down. I'm like.
It was so slick. I think that was the thing, too. It happened very suddenly. It's just like one little slice, and then it gently goes into her hand. The knife goes into her hand. And that's where I felt a lot of John Carpenter from this movie. Like, just like when that guy is on fire, like you look at Halloween or something, like how simple the staging is and how terrifying simple things can be. This movie is so full of that.
But then I think to myself, sitting in the movie theater, whoa, where are we going with this movie? And then where we go, I find to be very disappointing, because first of all, I can't stop thinking, like, what's this dude's plan? You know, he's gonna be locked in the room with her the whole time, because he's locked in the room, you know. If she's in the room and he's in the room, does he not have to pee ever? You know, what's the plan here? He's just gonna be locked in the room because the door's locked. He doesn't have a magical, unless he stole a key, I guess we can imagine that
he's a super
invisibly
hacker.
Stole the key and there's no way to unlock the door from the inside. I don't know. All of that, just like, I start going, what's this dude's end game? What's this plan? He's so obsessed with her that he's just going to sit in the room waiting for her to do something that he doesn't like. And of course that happens, but it's not even that, all that stuff. I was like, that's frustrating. Cause it stops making any real sense. And it just becomes a monster movie.
Can I defend? I want to hear what you have to say next, but can I defend that point for a second? Is that okay? Or
sure.
So, just in the movie's defense, right? I think like it adds to Elizabeth Moss's character's paranoia of maybe he's not in the room all the time, maybe he's only in there some of the time, and you just don't know, and that's like kind of part of the terror of the movie is you just don't know.
I get it.
Yeah. Okay.
She doesn't know. I can understand from her perspective, but from his perspective. Why would he ever be in the room?
I don't think the obsession is rational. And that I think that is the heart of the obsession, too. Like, she doesn't even know why he is so into, like, why her, of all people? Like, even she doesn't quite get it. There's a lot of, like, really interesting things happening here with the psychology of this, of the bad guy, basically.
I think the unspoken reason is that it's because she is normal that she can be more easily controlled, in his opinion.
Right.
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 And that's what is, like, if she was like a celebrity who had like vast resources, you know, like it would be different for her. It's one of the heartbreaking aspects of this movie is her, that monologue where she's like, why me? You've taken everything, you know? And like, but that's his kind of, that's part of his end game. All that said, Jeff, I agree with you. It does get into pretty wacky territory after that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's not even really, like I said, like I was starting to say, that's not even really my main gripe, is that what happens next is that it just becomes, I mean, he literally has some sort of monster growl at a certain point, and he has super strength somehow, and he's doing things that, it just becomes a really rote monster movie to me after that, and I am bummed because I wanted it to be this more intellectual horror that it starts out as, and it really feels like the movie just switches gears after she gets put into the incarceration and becomes this very less intelligent shocker slasher monster movie, and that's a bummer to me.
It does feel like the movie like was always headed there, is the thing. Like, yeah, it is sort of inevitable after that patient payoff, like setup, that you have to have some sort of explosive payoff. But go ahead, Dave.
Well, I think the part of the movie that's like pretty dumb is the ending. The ending is just so.
Yeah.
So essentially, right? Do we all agree that we think Adrian was actually behind the whole thing? Is that, do we all agree that?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which I think this, I don't know, I would have preferred if the twist was that it was the brother the whole time. I think that would have been cool.
Yeah, that would have been good.
He's literally dead. If he'd literally been dead the whole time, and the brother had a crush on Elizabeth Moss, and this is the only way he could get, like, I would have thought that would have been a much more interesting twist
Agreed.
But
agreed.
The movie wants to twist again after that.
I actually don't mind that because it does kind of, it continues with the theme of him basically, you know, gaslighting her in a way too. Like even the other thing she thought was true is not quite true.
Right. So it's one too many twists in my opinion. Cause like the moment when she takes off the mask and it's not Adrian is like a great holy shit moment in my opinion. But as you said, Jeff, like the movie is not content with just that. It's like, no, it's got to get in two more twists in there, right? Not only was it not Adrian the whole time, but because then you could have been like, ended the movie there. It's not Adrian. Adrian's actually dead. You know, it's the brother doing some weird shit.
It's a cool way to also make it like, how did he fake his own death? No, he didn't. He really died. Like that's, it makes the whole thing seem much more plausible where it's like, oh, that, yeah, you saw the picture of the dead body. You saw the, or, you know, all of the steps that we don't get explained as to how people bought that he was dead all of a sudden don't have to be explained because he was literally dead. And I was like, oh, you're smart movie. But then the movie's like, no, he's also not dead.
He's also not dead. He's somehow been in his basement the entire time.
Somehow sealed in his basement.
Sealed in his basement. Tied up.
Is that the plan? The plan was that he was always going to throw his brother under the bus on this. And at some point he knew somehow that he was going to be able to seal himself inside the basement.
Yes.
Yes.
To throw his brother under the bus.
He created some of the best like optic technology in the world. So like, I think we can assume he can figure out a way to convincingly seal himself in his basement. Has he been there the whole time, like orchestrating this or, and then the question is, why wouldn't his place have been searched after he was dead? You know what I mean? Like when people
are going to search the walls, right? I don't know.
It didn't seem like he was like,
they had to like break through something.
It was like a piece of wood. Something. It looked like, right.
When all of the hundreds of cops were marching through there, they're like, did anybody hear anything in the walls?
Did anyone hear someone screaming this morning? Like,
but he clearly wasn't there. Like that is part of the whole setup, right? Is that happened at the last minute, and you know,
So they kind of hand wave away like how he was dead and like alive the whole time or whatever. But I just think the movie doesn't really make sense. That last part doesn't really make sense if the brother is behind it. And when we're talking about the brother, we're talking about Adrian's brother, right?
Right.
And why would Adrian give a crap about whether or not, you know, why would Adrian's brother give a crap about whether or not Adrian's child was born? You know what I mean? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me if Adrian is dead, right?
Mm-hmm. Also, the movie seems to make the revelation that she's pregnant a surprise to even Adrian, right?
Yeah. They were all surprised. No, they didn't know. None of them.
Because I felt like if Adrian knew ahead of time, it would have made the whole movie make much more sense to me. If she's like, why are you so obsessed with me? And we find out that the reason he was so obsessed with her the whole time was that he knew she was pregnant and she didn't.
Well, he did stop the birth control pill. So maybe there was another, like maybe, he could have told at some point. But I don't think the movie explicitly says that.
So then we get to the final scene where Adrian and Cecilia have the confrontation, and Adrian kind of subtly conveys to her that she's telling the truth, right? He says something like, you know, our life will have many more surprises, aka code word. And then that kind of gives Elizabeth Moss the okay to go and murder him.
To go into the other room, get the suit on that is made for his body specifications.
Yeah, that somehow fits her,
Turn it on in a way she's never done before, but somehow knows how to. Walk out, kill him, go back, take it off, put her dress back on, and her makeup and hair are perfect, exactly as she left them, having been in a skin-tight skull cap suit.
By the way, the suit looks awesome. Yes. I love the look of the suit. Also, because I know we are actually testing like optical imagery technology, things that could eventually lead to something actually being invisible or, you know, in a similar sense. But I love just the array of cameras. It is that thing for people who hate seeing holes in objects?
Trypophobia or something like that?
Yeah, it is like the trypophobia nightmare of a camera suit. It's amazing.
Trypophobia is like, yes. a I agree. I got like kind of, I have mild trypophobia, so I got kind of like, you know, shivers when I saw that suit. But here's what I love about the suit is I don't think they do anything to explain how it works. And that's great. That's great. I love it.
Optics.
I love it. Yeah. It's just like you kind of see it. Just seeing it, you can kind of invent for yourself a story of how it works.
But you can also easily wash it off in the sink.
Yeah. That's nice. I mean, that part kind of sucked because like there's this amazing moment. It's in the trailer when she throws the paint on him, and it is like a shocking moment when she throws the paint on
him. Yeah, it's awesome.
And I was like,
all of that stuff, dude, that whole house sequence is so good. All of that stuff is so good. And, you know, like the discovering of the phone upstairs, all like that entire, and then leading up to that big fight in the kitchen, which felt like, oh man, it just felt like the movie was doing, it was hitting on all cylinders at that point. And, you know, it didn't need to turn into like shooting, you know, super strength, you know, taking out five guards. What dude could take out five guards?
I don't know if he's very, very strong, but he, you know, he has the advantage of them not seeing anything.
Yes,
so he could do whatever he wants.
If I don't see you, if I don't see you around the corner and I'm holding a gun and you try to put my gun on my own knee, I'm going to resist that a little bit.
Jeff is just extremely confident about his ability to take on an invisible man.
We're going to have to put you in a situation, Jeff, where you have to deal with a lot of this. And we'll see how you do.
This is like when Charlize Theron in Prometheus was not running away from the collapsing tower. You're like, why couldn't you in that moment think to run away from the collapsing tower? I think that Serpentine, I think that, you know, it's we can't know. Here's what I'll agree. I'll say this, Jeff. I think you're being a little bit hard on these people who didn't know how to defend themselves against an invisible man. But I do agree with you that Invisible Man was a little bit OP. You know, like,
well, I'm not hard on the people. I'm saying that the way the movie portrays it is he turns into a supervillain for a little while.
How is he breathing in this? How is he not making noise in this? You know, like, he's just like super overpowered in the movie, right?
Imagery, by the way, I assumed he could cancel a certain amount of sound or something, because that is tech we actually have right now.
Oh, that's true.
You can locally cancel sound. Yeah.
Optics expert, Vindra, not a not a noise canceling headphones here expert.
Yeah.
But the movie does so much heavy lifting to get us to know that it's going to rain a lot in LA, and then it doesn't do the thing. It doesn't even do the thing that it sets up, which is the outline of the rain on the Invisible Man.
I don't agree. You do see him in the outline a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Really? No, a little bit. Dave, it doesn't do for all of that setup of like planting the news report and knowing there's gonna, oh, we got big waves, big storm coming through. You know, I'm like, oh yeah, I know you're headed Invisible Man movie. I know what we're gonna see. We're gonna see that creepy moment where she stands in the rain and then the rain has a human outline on it. No, we do not get that. And I don't understand why it did so much effort to establish there was going to be rain to not even deliver that moment.
To pull the rug out from under you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of pulling the rug out, like, this is a very minor spoiler for Upgrade. So, Jeff, if you haven't seen it, want to see it, why don't you take off your headphones for like 10 seconds? Very minor spoiler. But basically, I'll say the ending of Upgrade is similar to the end of this movie. I listened to the commentary of Upgrade. And he basically is like, I love these endings. I love these endings where you see the ending and you recontextualize the entire thing. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it was this way all along. And I think he tried to do that here as well. And I just didn't, I thought it hurt the actual piece. But Devendra, you seem to be the biggest fan of this movie. Like, how did you feel about the ending where she takes control of the narrative and ends up murdering Adrian?
To me, like, I think on a, you know, on a thematic level, I think that makes the most amount of sense, because this is a movie that's essentially about somebody escaping an abuser, dealing with the trauma of, you know, leaving him. Like, we didn't even talk about, I love that this movie just spends time with her in her friend's house, just doing simple things like trying to go outside and finding the strength to do that. So I think in that empowerment respect, the ending, it feels to me satisfying in the way like a revenge movie would. I don't know if it makes the most sense, because the cops already know that this tech for invisible things happening and, you know, that are invisible, they know that's out there. Seeing this guy killed in a very like I don't know if they would assume he would just do that after having dinner with this woman that, you know, maybe she mentioned. I don't know if she even mentioned that he was abusing her or something. There's a lot of shadiness. I don't think her escape is very clean, but I what happens kind of worked for
me. Well, just like how does the legal system approach
a
world-altering discovery of this magnitude, right? Which is... people can be invisible now. Like, that would fundamentally change what we perceive as possible in terms of the legal system. And the movie doesn't really touch on any of that, but I'm fine with the actual overall arc of the main character. She gets her revenge at the end, and she kind of is emerging, physically emerging from this, like, underground lair and, like, triumphing, and that's fine.
Another excellent underground lair, by the way. Lee Whannell really loves those.
He's loves, really cool. A lot of similarities with Upgrade here. A lot of similarities. But yeah, so fine with that arc for Cecilia. Just wasn't a fan of the way that is just like twist after twist. And basically, instead of enjoying the ending and her triumph, I'm thinking, so how did that work again with Adrian Underground? You know, like, that's all I'm thinking about. And I don't want to be thinking about that, you know?
I don't know. I don't know, guys. Like, I was along for the ride. I understand it could be like a twist upon twist. But to me, it felt fun in a way where these thrillers, you kind of want them to do different things. And if it was just the brother, like the brother did it, seems like a very pat and uninteresting way of, like, you know, tying this whole thing up. Because I've seen a lot of like Ashley Judd movies that feel very similar to this, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen Kiss the Girls. This felt different and I appreciate that.
I'm with you though, Dave. I was sitting there on the end going, who could possibly be in the suit right now? Because we've established a friend is outside. So what other characters are in this movie? And then it's like, oh, it was her? No, there's no way she had the time.
She hid it there. Yeah.
There's no way she had the time to get into that suit.
I'm more surprised he didn't like realize his other prototype invisible suit was missing. At some point, wouldn't you check on that sucker?
Or wouldn't the police have come in after he killed himself and like checked everything out? Anyway, it doesn't really stand up to much scrutiny in my opinion, but whatever. The rest of the movie is really good. And also, by the way, movie does a really good job of explaining, if you were invisible, how you would frame someone for murder. You know, you'd look over their shoulder to figure out what their password is, write emails as them threatening someone. Get them into a public place where everyone can see this terrible thing happening, and there you go, and that's terrifying.
Even the just like smacking the girl in the room, that to me was like, how do you say I didn't do that?
Exactly.
That moment to me was even worse than the murder. I was just like, yeah, dude, if you could just punch someone in the face, and they'd be like, why did you punch me in the face? I didn't. What do you mean you didn't?
That's interesting because, like, most of the time when you see invisible people, like, again, in Hollow Man, they go straight to the overt terror. You know what I mean? Like, they don't they don't do the long game of, we're going to leave a paper trail saying you're going to murder this person, you know? It's really terrifying, the idea of an invisible man, and this movie really brings out what that idea is what that idea's potential is. So,
yeah. I just hope we get the sequel. I want to see The Invisible Woman. I want to see it.
All right. It's possible. It's possible. This movie is a hit, basically. So,
well, this is the beginning of the Dark Universe, is what I'm understanding. No?
We'll talk about it during the next After Dark. But anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of this review of The Invisible Man. You can find more episodes of this show at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. This episode was edited by Beatty Zhang. It was the spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Stay tuned to what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, Jeff Cannata, where can you find more of your work on the internet?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have a video game podcast that you can listen to. It's called DLC. You can find that at 5by5.tv/DLC or anywhere you get podcasts. And I also do a live play Dungeons and Dragons show. Actually, this last week's episode was, I think, a great jumping on point. If you've been curious about the show, you can just jump on episode 38, I believe it is, called The Augury of the Elders. Very fun episode, really funny first half, where the team is trying to get these lava lizards out of a volcano. they turn into apes and they start flying around, picking them up. It was great fun.
Hated
so check
that
out. It's called The Dungeon Run. You can find it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can find it as an audio podcast. It works great as an audio podcast by searching for The Dungeon Run anywhere you get podcasts. I'm also told we are now on Tesla. We're on TuneIn on Tesla. Ooh. So that's good. And also you can watch it live. If you want to watch it live and participate, viewers participate in the show on The Dungeon Run. You can do that Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run.
Devendra Hardware?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Devendra. I write about tech at Engadget.com. Check out the Engadget podcast. I just interviewed Anne Dryan, the co-creator of the Cosmos TV show, about that upcoming next season. She's amazing and really a really interesting person to talk to in this time of like hopelessness. So check that out.
Check out my YouTube channel on youtube.com/Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. A lot of film stuff there, a lot of commentary stuff there, a lot of reviews. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. All right, next week on our What We've Been Watching and After Dark episode, we're going to talk about Onward. We're going to talk about Giri Haji. We're going to talk about Freaks, Love is Blind, and a bunch of other things. So that's what you have to look forward to on the next episode of the Slash Filmcast. We'll see you next week. We watch the